Thanks to Alfred and Nancy in Red Lodge, Montana, we're only 8 members short of our goal of 200 Reformation Club members by All Saints Sunday, November the 6th. The Issues Etc. Reformation Club is our monthly or annual giving program. Find out about benefits of becoming an Issues Etc. confessor, apologist, reformer, or patron at our website, issuesetc.org. Look for the picture of Martin Luther posting the 95 Theses. Please help us reach our goal of 200 Reformation Club members by this Sunday, November the 6th.
Don't know when you're gonna be in the World Series again, and just thank God, you know, that every day that I come here and wear this uniform and try to help this organization win.
For the Occupy Wall Street protesters in New York's Zuccotti Park, it's become a familiar sight. Religious groups offering spiritual and moral support.
The Bible's all about just a fairer shake for people and God's concern for all of God's children, not just a small segment of the population.
That's what faithful pastors are there to do, is to do nothing else than point you to the Good Shepherd himself, who is not as far as the heavens are from the earth.
Indiana truck drivers, rubbish, etc.
If you read the Gospels in the New Testament, you will notice something, and we've talked about this many times in many of the Holy Week, Good Friday kind of shows that we've done, treatments of the Gospels. The closer you get to the final events of Jesus' life before his crucifixion and resurrection, the more detailed things get. It's like the camera zooms in. And with that, you get perhaps a better way of kind of sorting out what happened when. Now, there's still a lot of red flags on the play. There's still a debate about what day and what hour all these events of Holy Week, Jesus' crucifixion, resurrection occurred. There's an ongoing question that many honest Christians ask about what does it mean that he was in the tomb 3 days when, if you add it up, if he's crucified on Friday and raised early on the first day of the week, which would have been Sunday, that's not 3 24-hour days. All those kind of questions come up. Hopefully we can answer them as we talk about the day, the date, the timing of Jesus' death and resurrection with Dr. Andrew Steinman in this hour of Issues Etc. Part 5 of a 6-part series on biblical chronology. We've come to the biggest event in all of human history. You can join us, 1-877-623-6943. We are coming to you live this Wednesday afternoon, the 2nd of November. I'm Todd Wilkin, and thanks for tuning us in. 1-877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or send us a tweet at @issuesetc. Dr. Andrew Steinman is professor of theology and Hebrew at Concordia University Chicago, author of the new book, From Abraham to Paul, A Biblical Chronology. Dr. Steinman, welcome back.
Good to be back with you after a couple weeks, Todd.
Yeah, we had kind of the intervening Reformation week in there here on Issues Etc. Gave you a little time off. Last time we talked, we were talking about dating Jesus' birth. Why is it easier to date his death than his birth?
Well, because of information in the New Testament that kind of makes it pretty easy to just calculate. We know that Jesus was baptized in the 15th year of Tiberius Caesar. That would have been around AD 30. So we know it had to have occurred after that. And so all we need to do is look for a Friday Passover during the years that followed that. Assuming, and we can talk about how we know it was a Friday that he was crucified. But if we look for a Friday Passover during those years, we find out between, say, the years 26 and 36, there were only 2 years with a Friday Passover. One of them was 30, then that was the year he was baptized, and he was baptized after Passover, so that rules that out. The other year was AD 33, so we can pin down his crucifixion to the year AD 33 at the beginning of April.
Are there any other candidates? Because we recently had a question on the show. Asking about whether or not we know that Jesus' ministry was indeed about 3 years, or could it have been shorter, or could it have been longer? I'm asking kind of the longer question. Is there a Friday that would fit if it's a longer ministry than just 3 years?
The only other one could be would be in A.D. 30, and the problem there is he was baptized in A.D. 30. Even if you give him a one-year ministry, you're to 31, and there's no Friday Passover in 31. So kind of the short and long answer is he had to have a ministry of somewhat over 3 years, and it has to be A.D. 33.
Okay. That gets us into the year. And you said it's pretty easy to show that the crucifixion itself occurs on a Friday. Just walk us through the basic information we need to pin that one down.
Okay, well, we know that he was crucified before a Sunday, right? Because we know he rose on the first day of the week, so that's Sunday. We know that, for instance, they tried to get him in the grave. When Joseph Arimathea tries to get him in the grave, he tries to do it quickly because the sun is going down and the Sabbath is beginning, and he doesn't want to be unclean on the Sabbath. If you touch a dead body, you're unclean until sundown. So he wants to get him, you know, in before the Sabbath begins at sundown. So that would seem to indicate it's a Friday. And then we have a number of other indications. For instance, we're told that it was the day of preparation. And when you look in the ancient writers of the time, both the New Testament, there's an indication of Mark this way, as well as Josephus, you find out that the day of preparation is the way during that era that Jews referred to Friday, the day they were preparing for the Sabbath. So since the fact that it's called the day of preparation also tells us it's Friday. So there's a number of indications here that all point to Friday.
Then let's just talk about some questions that are raised about that. Some have said that there may have been multiple Sabbaths in this special Passover week. There are questions about the Feast of Unleavened Bread, when that begins, when it doesn't. And a lot of those questions center around not Friday, but Thursday, where we would normally put Jesus' Last Supper with his disciples. What are the problems that appear there, and what solutions do they have?
Yeah, well, the problem comes because, as you alluded to at the opening of the broadcast, that Jesus refers to this as 3 days and three nights, or on the third day he's going to rise from the dead. And so people were saying, well, it's got to be three 24-hour days, so they try to push it back to Thursday, or in some extreme cases, even to Wednesday for his crucifixion. The problem with that is multiple. One is they're not understanding that phrase, 3 days and three nights. The other problems have to do with the fact that you can't really have multiple Sabbaths. This usually comes from misunderstanding John's statement that Sabbath was a great Sabbath. And so they're saying, well, what does a great Sabbath mean? It must be the first day of unleavened bread, and they'll call that a Sabbath. The problem here is understanding how they were referring to both Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread. In the Old Testament, the Passover occurs on one day, and then the week following that, the day following that begins the first day of unleavened bread, and for 7 days you're going to have unleavened bread following the Passover, so you have an eight-day period. In the first century, the terms Feast of Unleavened Bread and Passover kind of merged together because these feasts are right next to each other. And sometimes they would use Passover to refer to the entire 8 days, the Passover plus the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And sometimes they would use the days of unleavened bread or the Feast of Unleavened Bread to refer to the entire 8 days, including the Passover. And so you've got to know in what sense they're using the words. And so when John says it was during the Feast of Unleavened Bread and it was a great Sabbath, what he's talking about is the first day of unleavened bread, where there were special sacrifices, happened to also be that year a Sabbath. So it was a great Sabbath because it was corresponded to the beginning of that 7 day feast, and it happened to also be a Sabbath. And when people don't realize how these terms were used kind of ambiguously in the first century, they make this mistake. But we have plenty of evidence, not only from the New Testament itself, where it uses these terms this way, but also from, again, Josephus, the ancient Jewish writer, who informs us of this. And so once we kind of sort out the terminology, then we don't have to worry about, oh, was it a Thursday or was it a Wednesday or something like that.
With only about a minute and a half before we take our first break, how does that passage in John's Gospel, and he does kind of seem to be a little bit of the odd man out here, John 18:28, where the Jewish leaders would not enter the Gentile praetorium, John says, so that they would not be defiled but might eat the Passover. How does that passage figure into this misunderstanding, common misunderstanding about the date of Jesus' crucifixion?
Yeah, usually people read that as if, oh, the day that they are going to be eating the unleavened bread on is the next day, so that they say John must have the Passover the next day, where the synoptic Gospels have it on the previous day, and they see a conflict here. But I think they're misunderstanding what John is saying. You could eat the Passover. Now, you had to eat it from in the evening, and you had to eat it up before the sun came up, and they hadn't eaten it yet. Well, the reason they hadn't eaten it yet is they had Jesus on trial. They were too busy trying to put Jesus to death and find him guilty, and so they haven't had a chance to eat the Passover. John is not saying, and he never says, that they actually ate the Passover, and I think this is part of his condemnation of them, because if you read the Old Testament, in the Law of Moses, if you don't eat the Passover, you're to be cut off from the people of God. And what they are doing is bringing condemnation down on themselves by not eating the Passover and instead trying to make sure they get Jesus crucified. And John is telling us they don't go into the praetorium. It's still before dawn. They're hoping they can get a quick ruling from Pilate to put Jesus to death so that they can then go eat the Passover and have Jesus crucified. And what John is showing us is it doesn't happen that quick. And in fact, God orchestrates the events so that they bring this curse on themselves because they are so busy trying to get Jesus crucified.
Very interesting. Very interesting. I'm always puzzled over that particular passage. Dr. Andrew Steinman is our guest, part five of a six-part series we're doing with him on biblical chronology today, Jesus' crucifixion and resurrection.
In a world awash with all sorts of information, opinions, and ideas, there is still a place where God's Word is the central and only focus. Messiah Lutheran Church, 801 North Madison, Lebanon, Illinois. At 9 o'clock on Sunday mornings, God's people gather there to listen to Him. There you will find His words of law and gospel, and of course, our Lord's Holy Supper. Bible classes focus on the Bible and the Lutheran confessions. Come, listen, believe, and live, and check out our website at messiahlebanon.org.
We've got nothing against bumper stickers, just bumper sticker theology, and we'd like to send you an Issues Etc. bumper sticker. You'll find the Issues Etc. logo, slogan, and website address. Simply send your request to Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Please include a self-addressed stamped envelope. Good theology doesn't fit on a bumper sticker, but you can tell people where to find good theology, the Issues Etc. bumper or window sticker.
Christological, creedal, confessional. You're listening to Issues Etc.
If any former evangelicals are hearing me speak right now, I want to assure you, you don't have to be a homeless Christian. If you would go to issuesetc.org, look on their website, you'll find a list of churches. Find one close to you and attend that church. There, you can receive the true gospel, you don't have to be a homeless Christian, and they will not call you a backslider.
To find a church near you, go to issuesetc.org and click Find a Church.
This is a message for members of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Thrivent Financial has a new charitable grant program called Thrivent Choice. Thrivent Choice allows you to designate charitable outreach funds to Lutheran Public Radio. For more information, look for the Thrivent logo under the Donate page of our website, issuesetc.org, or ask your Thrivent representative about Thrivent Choice. Help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. with Thrivent Choice.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Andrew Steinman is our guest. He's professor of theology and Hebrew at Concordia University, Chicago, author of the new book, From Abraham to Paul, A Biblical Chronology. We're working from it as we continue our series with him on biblical chronology today, Jesus, Crucifixion, and Resurrection. Now, if you've got a question or a comment for Dr. Steinman, we are coming to you live this Wednesday afternoon, November the 2nd, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at @issuesetc. I want to come back to that point you made right before the break, and that is, it seems as though then John is making a very profound point about Jesus' accusers and enemies, that they would, in essence, to kind of put it in simple language, they would be willing to even do something as unthinkable for a first century devout Jew as skip the Passover in order to get Jesus killed.
Yes, and you know, the synoptics make a similar statement. There's a statement there that they say, you know, that they want to kill Jesus, but not on the feast, lest there be an uproar among the people. But they end up doing it during the feast anyway. And the whole point of this is that they think they're so much in control of the events and that they can control the events and in the end, they end up skipping the Passover because they can't control the events, and they end up crucifying him on the feast because they can't control the events. God's in control. Jesus is in control. No one takes his life from him. He lays it down, as he himself says.
Now, you said something about this before, but I don't know if I completely caught it, and so I think probably listeners need to hear it again. This conflation of two terms, that is Passover and Feast of Unleavened Bread, and therefore what the word Day of Preparation may or may not mean.
Yeah, they were sometimes using the term Passover to refer to these whole 8 days, the Passover plus the Feast of Unleavened Bread, and sometimes they were using Feast of Unleavened Bread to refer to the whole 8 days, Passover plus Feast of Unleavened Bread. So, for instance, when John says it was a day of preparation, if we can kind of translate the Greek very literally, the day of preparation of the Passover. It doesn't mean the day to prepare the Passover. It means day of preparation equals Friday during the week that was called Passover week, that is, the 8 days from Passover to the end of Unleavened Bread.
Okay. Is it because we are so distant from the events themselves historically and culturally that these are problems for us? Did the first century Jews and then later Gentiles who were closer to the events, were these less a problem for sorting out the chronology than it is for us?
Yeah, it was much because they understood that these were terms and how they were being used. When we read in our Bibles, it was the day of preparation of the Passover, we don't know that those are terms referring to specific things, and we try to read it as if, oh, it was the day to prepare the Passover, so it must have been the day before the Passover began. We don't realize that those were kind of common terms referring to specific events during this period of time. And so, you know, unless we understand all these were terms they were using to refer to certain things, we can get quite confused. And in fact, that's what's led to confusion on this matter, is people read it and apply their modern understanding to ancient texts rather than reading ancient text the way the ancients would have read them and with the meaning of the terms the way the ancients would have understood them.
So what other issues are there surrounding the— now we're not talking about so much dates, but timing within those dates of the events, any other apparent contradictions, so to speak, between the gospel writers?
Yeah, there are apparent contradictions between John and the synoptics on what time things took place on this day from the time of Jesus being brought to trial to his death. And that has to do with the fact that John is very consistent, although many scholars are confused on this, but John is very consistent. He's using Roman time. Now, Roman time is like our time. You start counting the hours at midnight. So, you know, 1 a.m., 2 p.m., 3 p.m., or 1 a.m., 2 a.m., 3 a.m. are counted like we would. So when John talks about the sixth hour or the ninth hour, he's talking about 6 a.m. or 9 a.m., okay? The problem is that the synoptics are on Jewish time, and they are counting it from sunup, approximately 6 o'clock in the morning. And so when they talk about the third hour, you have to add 6 hours to that to get to Roman time or our time, so that when they say something happened the third hour, they mean 9 a.m. When something happened at the sixth hour, they mean noon. So you kind of have to add, you know, six to it, because they're counting from sun up or sundown approximately, and so they're off from Roman time. And people have seen a conflict between John and the synoptics, not realizing that John is apparently understanding things for a Roman audience and using Roman time throughout his gospel. And he's very consistent. Once you look at whenever he refers to it was such and such an hour, when you realize he's on Roman time, it makes perfect sense. And this even shows up with the way he refers to places. For instance, he's the only gospel writer that refers to the Sea of Galilee as the Sea of Tiberias, named after the Emperor Tiberius. Well, that's because he's writing to an audience that would have understood things in Roman terms, and so he uses Roman time.
All right, so we have Jesus on the cross. Walk us through it. Well, let's do this. Let's rewind the tape and go back to Thursday.
Okay.
And let's get a timeline down as close as we can. I think it's quite interesting now that we've been able to say it's 33 A.D., and we've cleared away the red flags regarding when things happened within these series of days, and how long Jesus was on the cross, or how long Jesus was in the grave. Let's do a timeline from Thursday.
Okay, well, if we take about 6 p.m. to about 8 p.m. on Thursday, that's probably about the time when the Last Supper took place. Then if we figure about 8 o'clock, Jesus foretells Peter's denial, and shortly after that they go out to Gethsemane, and Jesus is praying there. It's probably about 11 o'clock or so in the evening when Jesus is arrested, so 11 p.m. He's dragged before Caiaphas, the high priest, and put on trial. That probably lasts till 4:30 a.m. in the morning. That's the time also during which Peter's outside in the courtyard denying Jesus, and we get that whole story in the Gospels. Then from about 4:30 to 6, they take Jesus to Pontius Pilate, and this is where they get the delay, because they think, oh, well, if we can get before about 6 o'clock in the morning when the sun comes up, we can get in our Passover still. But Pilate delays it. He wants to question Jesus. He sends Jesus over to Herod Antipas and gets him back. And this is probably also the time during this time that Judas hangs himself. This is the time shortly before 6 a.m. that Pilate gives them the choice between Jesus and Barabbas, and they choose Barabbas, and Barabbas is freed. And Jesus is handed over to the soldiers to be scourged. And they mock Jesus, the soldiers mock Jesus. And then finally, around 6 a.m., the Gospels say, Jesus is sent out to be crucified. And here Simon, of course, as Jesus is being led out, is forced to carry the cross. Jesus addresses the crowd as he's carrying the cross. He is put on the cross about 9 o'clock in the morning. Between 9 o'clock and noon, we have a number of things that happen while Jesus is crucified. His garments are divided. They place this charge on the cross, Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews, you know, that Pilate refuses to change. The priests protest that to Pilate, and Pilate says, I've written what I've written. It's his way of getting back at them for maneuvering him into allowing Jesus to be crucified. And Jesus talks to his mother, apparently, from the cross, as St. John's Gospel tells us. the Synoptic Gospels tell us that from about noon until 3 p.m., the sun is darkened in that part of the world, so there's darkness here. And about 3 p.m., Jesus dies. The thieves have their legs broken because they haven't died yet on the cross, and they want to get him off for the Sabbath. They're trying to, you know, hurry up their death before the sun goes down about 6 o'clock in the evening. So this is when Jesus died. His side is pierced. The curtain in the temple is torn. There's the earthquake. And then we're told after this, the saints come out of their tombs.
Well, let's take a break right there. Yeah. I want to pick up on this timeline on the other side. It's fascinating to think of it as in terms of as the clock goes, as the clock ticks down to that crucial hour at 3 o'clock on this Friday afternoon, Jesus breathes his last and declares, "It is finished." That, in terms of our calendar, is in fact the pivotal moment of all human history, the moment toward which and from which all human history drives and flows. Kind of fascinating to think about it that way. Dr. Andrew Steinman is our guest. Another in our series on biblical chronology, today's Jesus, Crucifixion, and Resurrection. Issues Etc. relies on a small group of faithful supporters called the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. These people have pledged to become monthly or annual contributors to Issues Etc., and this allows us to budget our expenses more efficiently. Now, there are four levels of giving. The Confessor, $25 monthly or an annual gift of $250. The Apologist, $50 monthly or an annual gift of $500. The Reformer, $100 monthly or an annual gift of $1,000. And the Patron, $200 monthly or an annual gift of $2,000. Each Reformation Club member receives premiums like books, transcripts, and the I Have Issues t-shirt. You can join the Issues Etc. Reformation Club by contacting Craig. His email address, craig@issuesetc.org. Or you can call 618-223-8385. 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Reformation Club.
The cross is always relevant. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Is it okay to kill a newborn infant?
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Apparently, it is okay to take a newborn infant's life if you do so in Canada. A Canadian judge recently refused to punish a woman who strangled her own newborn baby. Justice Joanne Veit acknowledged the defendant committed infanticide, but said Canadians are sympathetic towards women with unwanted pregnancies. She pointed out that is why Canada places virtually no regulations on abortions. By her reasoning, then, because Canadians sympathize with women who have unwanted pregnancies, Canadians would not want to punish the defendant who simply waited to abort her baby until after he was born.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's Wednesday afternoon, the 2nd of November. Dr. Andrew Steinman is our guest. He's been kind enough to join us multiple times here in the last couple weeks to do a series on biblical chronology. We're basing it on a fantastic new book that he has written called From Abraham to Paul, A Biblical Chronology. Tell us a little bit about the book, Dr. Steinman.
Well, it takes all the major events and what many people would call minor events, too, for that matter, in the Bible, anything that we can reasonably date and determine the date for, and walks you through how we know to date these events, everything from the life of Abraham through the death of Peter and Paul at the end of the first century. And so it gives you kind of a way, how do we know when Hezekiah ruled, when David was on the throne, when Jesus was born, how do we know when St. Paul was on his second missionary journey, and tells you, okay, here's kind of the state of the arguments, here's what people have thought in the past, and how can we know what's the correct date and what's the reasoning that gets us there, and what are the sources outside the Bible that help us to place these things in their historical context.
You can find out more about this great book. It really is fantastic, From Abraham to Paul. I know of nothing like it. And once you realize that what you're reading here, and it's great summaries near the end of the chapters to tell you what it actually looks like in terms of dates and times with biblical references, From Abraham to Paul, A Biblical Chronology, find out more about it by going to our website and looking on the Listen on Demand page, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House and invest in this book. It is well worth it. Their toll-free number, 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. Now we got to the time and the place of the crucifixion, about 3 o'clock, Friday afternoon, 33 A.D. And, oh, by the way, what month are we talking about here?
We're April. In fact, we can date it since it's the Passover, April 2nd.
April 2nd, 33 A.D., 3 o'clock in the afternoon. When Jesus dies, the clock kind of starts ticking again, at least for those around him. You mentioned it before the break. They want the bodies off the cross and the burials done before the sun goes down on Friday. What's that about?
Yeah, well, Joseph of Arimathea, we're told, gets permission from Pilate to bury Jesus' body, and he wants to get it in the grave before the sun goes down so he's not unclean on the Sabbath, because if you touch a dead body, you're unclean until sundown. So he gets this permission, and all this has to happen then between about 3 o'clock when Jesus dies and about 6 o'clock or so when the sun goes down. And so we can kind of date all that activity of him going to Pilate, getting the permission, getting the body, putting it in this new tomb that has never been used, about 3 hours, between 3 and 6 p.m.
This is not the age of cars or telephones or text messages. He has to walk to Pilate's spot. He has to get an audience. Pilate is the governor. He doesn't probably show up every time the doorbell rings. So
right.
This has to be done in real haste.
Yes, yes. He's very got to be very quick about this by his terms. Fortunately, the distances are short. It probably says something about Joseph of Arimathea that he can get an audience with Pilate at all. He probably has a guy with some juice that he can do that. We know he's fairly rich because he has this tomb that nobody's ever used that he's going to put Jesus in. So he's probably a rich, influential guy that he can go to Pilate and get this audience and get this done within 3 hours.
He has Jesus in his own tomb before the sun goes down, and that's where the question is raised about 3 days, 3 days, 3 nights, or 3 days in the grave. Jesus says it several different ways. For the sake of clearing it up once and for all, how do we reconcile that with the fact that he is actually in the tomb? I mean, as the clock ticks, he's in the tomb far less than 36 hours. I mean, what would it be? 24 times 3, far less than that many hours or over that span of days.
Yeah, well, we have to, again, understand in biblical times how they're using phrases like 3 days and 3 nights or on the third day. In fact, Jesus tells us kind of this. Jesus talks about today, tomorrow, and the third day. So when they count, they're counting the day they're already on. You know, and then tomorrow, and then the third day. So on the third day, that expression kind of means the day after tomorrow. Well, Sunday is the day after tomorrow from the vantage point of Friday. So that gets rid of the phrase on the third day. The 3 days and three nights is kind of interesting because you can look for examples in the Old Testament and find a couple where they talk about 3 days and three nights, and they're not using it to mean three complete days and three complete nights. So in Esther, we have this span of days talked about that Esther's going to go in to see the king on the third day, and you find out she doesn't wait three complete days. She goes in earlier, and we find Joseph is going to do something with his brothers, you know, when his brothers are coming down to Egypt, and he's playing this little dance with them because they don't recognize him, and he's going to keep one of his brothers in prison 3 days and three nights. But if you read the narrative carefully, he leaves him out before three complete days and three complete nights have been. You can't even count 3 days and three nights. And so they're obviously understanding this expression a little bit more loosely than we moderns might want to understand it. And that explains why on the third day means on Sunday, and why still in the Creed when we talk about Jesus rising from the dead on the third day, we mean Sunday, because he's crucified on a Friday, that's one day, Saturday, that's the second day, Sunday, that's on the third day.
The resurrection, the actual event itself, Matthew seems to indicate that the actual resurrection, or at least the fact that the resurrection has occurred, because the angel comes down, opens the tomb, and reveals it to be empty, happens before the sun comes up on that third day. Is there any way of getting any closer than that?
No, there really isn't. He rolls away the tomb, the stone, at daybreak. So it happens, before the tomb is revealed, and before, obviously, the disciples get there. So we can say, the resurrection happens very early in the morning around sunup. So before 6 o'clock, somewhere in that area, that's about the best we can do.
There's one other question I have about that, and it has more to do with the ascension than with the resurrection, but the two are put together. Luke seems to sound like, and I know that Dr. Arthur Just, a frequent guest on the program, has his own explanation for this. He's kind of written the book on Luke. Luke seems to make it sound like you're the day of the resurrection. The two Emmaus disciples witness Christ on the road. They run back to Jerusalem. The disciples are there. Jesus appears to all of them, and then he leads them out of the city and ascends into heaven, right there from Jerusalem. The other Gospels say, no, it happened some weeks later.
Yeah, well, and I don't think Luke is necessarily to be read that way, as if it happens all at once, because Luke makes it clear when he writes Acts that it happened sometime later. Luke is merely telescoping events to get, the major events in, and I don't think we should read Luke as if, it happened that day, the ascension happened that day. Now, I know some people try to read it that way, but, Luke himself says later on it happened 40 days later. I don't think we should read Luke as in the Gospels as if he's saying, now here it happened right away. He just happens to relate that event as the next event, the next major event and the last major event that he's going to put in his Gospels. And then when he writes Theophilus again in Acts, he makes it clear, it was 40 days later.
One other question in that respect is kind of a random chronology question. And that is, Jesus' instructions to the disciples is that they are to go up to Galilee, where he will meet them. And only John, I think, records them actually going to Galilee. I think he has them going back up to fish. And then Jesus appears to them there by the side of the sea. What's going on with that?
Yeah, no location is given for some things. For instance, in John 20... when we have Thomas present, we're not given any location as to where it happened. We usually think of it as happening in Jerusalem, but we don't know. And then Jesus was in Galilee when he commissioned his disciples. That's in Matthew 28. And he appears to the disciples at the seashore in John 21, apparently in Galilee. And then we have them back in, after he appears to them in Galilee, we have them during that 40-day period coming back to Jerusalem, because he ascends from the area of Jerusalem, according to the book of Acts. That's where his ascension is. So we have some events that happen in Galilee, and they're going back and forth, and we don't know exactly when they go to Galilee and meet with Jesus. And exactly when they come back, but it all happens apparently during this 40-day period between Jesus' resurrection and his ascension.
And real quickly, with about 10 seconds, there's enough time in 40 days to get all that done?
Oh, yeah. And you can walk from Jerusalem to Galilee, in a matter of a few days. So it's not like you're in the United States and you're going from Nebraska to New Jersey or something like that. It's more like you're walking around Connecticut, you know, or something like that. I mean, the distances are you know, it's going to take you a little time to walk, but they're not that bad that you can't walk them in a few days. Certainly within a week, even if you're taking a leisurely trip, you can go from Galilee to Jerusalem or the other way.
Dr. Andrew Steinman is our guest. Your questions and comments on this Wednesday afternoon, 1-877-623-MYIE. Talk back at issuesetc.org or send us a tweet at issuesetc. We'll be right back. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November is a book and a DVD. It's a Bible study on three major themes in Scripture: witness, mercy, life together. Now, the DVD features four instructional videos by Lutheran Church Missouri Synod President Matt Harrison. You can purchase Witness, Mercy, Life Together by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, or you can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org. Witness, Mercy, Life Together.
Would you like for us to post information about your congregation on the Find a Church page of our website? We'll add your church when it becomes part of the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc. Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your church's mission or advertising budget. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 at issuesetc.org. Click support and publicize your congregation to the world.
Theology for blue collar, white collar, and clerical collar. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Steadfast Lutherans, people who believe the law condemns everyone and should be preached to the fullest. People who believe the gospel is for everyone and should be preached to its sweetest. Traditional Lutheran doctrine and practice deliver every Sunday this law and gospel, that Christ was crucified for us sinners. To all who received him, who believed in his name, the Gospel of John says, he gave the right to become children of God. To see how Steadfast Lutherans preserves this good news for everyone, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
It's here, it's here, it's finally here. Lutheran Catechesis Catechist Edition, a comprehensive guide to catechesis for a Lutheran congregation, including expanded helps on the catechism, a section of catechesis on the table of duties, Christian vocation, and learn-by-heart schedules for the congregation at prayer. Order yours today from the Concordia Catechetical Academy at peacesussex.org.
A very special thanks to Alfred and Nancy in Red Lodge, Montana. With their joining the Issues Etc. Reformation Club, we're only 8 members short of our goal of 200 in the Reformation Club by All Saints Sunday, November the 6th. Issues Etc.'s Reformation Club is our monthly or annual giving program. You can find out about the benefits of becoming an Issues Etc. confessor, apologist, reformer, or patron at our website, issuesetc.org. Look for the picture of Martin Luther posting the 95 Theses. You can help us reach this goal of 200 Reformation Club members by this Sunday, November the 6th. We're talking about biblical chronology, our ongoing series with Dr. Andrew Steinman. Today, Jesus' crucifixion and resurrection. Dr. Steinman is professor of theology and Hebrew at Concordia University Chicago and author of the new book, From Abraham to Paul, A Biblical Chronology. Here's a question from Jason listening in Austin, Texas. He says, I'm listening to your broadcast live this afternoon, and I'm learning some interesting things. I really appreciate knowing that the Gospel of John was written to a Roman audience. I was wondering if it might also be possible to confirm the hour of Jesus' death through astronomical records. Would it be possible for an astronomer to approximate when the solar eclipse would have occurred? I think he here is making reference to the fact that some theorize that the darkness for those 3 hours from noon until 3 were on account of a solar eclipse.
Yeah. Well, let me say we have used astronomy already in that we've determined when the Passover would have occurred on a Friday, because the Passover occurs on the 14th day of the month of Nisan, the first month of the Jewish calendar, and we have to use astronomy to figure out what years that would have happened in. So we've already kind of done that in a way. Unfortunately, the assumption that this was a solar eclipse has to be wrong, because the first day of Nisan happens, the Nisan is determined by a new moon. and you're 14 days past the new moon when you get to the 14th day of Nisan for a Passover. A solar eclipse can only happen on a new moon. So it couldn't have been a solar eclipse that darkened the sun. It could have been a storm of some type, a dust storm, for instance, which you have in the ancient Near East, which can stir up the dust and obscure the sun and bring darkness over the land for a period of time, just like we can have a dark period during the day, you know, when the streetlights come on, when the clouds obscure the sun during a storm. So I think it was more likely some other phenomenon and not an astrological phenomenon, because it would have been impossible at the Passover to have a solar eclipse.
It could well have been, and I'm sure you would agree, simply a supernatural dimming of the sun by some means unknown to us, but a miracle of God.
Yeah, it could well have been that, too. But it definitely could not have been a solar eclipse.
All right. We have now, then, kind of bookends for the ministry of Jesus. Last time we talked about his birth, and then today we've established a fixed a date in an absolute chronology, even down to the hour, for his death. Does that help us, with those two bookends on his ministry, does that help us date some of the things, any of the things, in his earthly ministry?
We can. We can know that Jesus' earthly ministry started in the 15th year of Tiberius Caesar. He had to be baptized at that time, as we're told in the Gospels. And so I think I erroneously said 30 A.D. earlier, actually 29 A.D., and it would have taken place probably in the autumn summer of 29 A.D., Jesus is baptized. And so we can probably put the beginning of John the Baptist's ministry a little earlier, that probably in the spring of 29, John is out proclaiming things. In the summer, Jesus comes to be baptized. That would put, of course, his temptation follows right after that. And then Jesus calling his disciples probably probably in the autumn of that year. And so these things happen in 29 A.D., in the first part of Jesus, a partial year of Jesus' ministry. And then in 30, we know Jesus would be in Jerusalem at the Passover. He was at several Passovers, the Gospels tell us, so his first Passover would have been in 30. Then we could get to John the Baptist, being arrested probably later in that year in the Hebrew month of Kislev in 30. John probably is baptized, and that's when Jesus travels through Samaria to go north to his ministry in Galilee. And so probably early in 31, we have the beginning of Jesus' Galilean ministry. John tells us he goes back to Jerusalem for the Feast of Tabernacles, and that probably happens then in the fall, in the Hebrew month of Tishri, in 31. That happens there. Then he continues on with his ministry in Galilee, goes back to Galilee. We can probably date John the Baptist's death then very interestingly to early 32, probably in the month of Tebeth, which would have been before the Passover, month of Nisan in 32. In 32, Jesus in the spring is continuing his ministry in Galilee. Near the end, we have the feeding of the 5,000. We know that happened in the spring because the gospel writers tell us that the grass was new. This would happen in the spring. And that would then lead, of course, to Jesus walking on the water on the Sea of Galilee, probably in 31, and his healing at Gennesaret, also during the spring of 31. Later in that year, in the summer, sometime he ends his ministry in Galilee, goes up to Tyre and Sidon and over to the Decapolis with his ministry there. We have him at Caesarea Philippi during this mid-year in 31 when Peter confesses he's the Christ, the Son of the living God. Luke tells us, and this is probably a little bit later in that year, that he had a ministry on the border of Samaria. Luke tells us in chapter 17 and 18. And then John tells us he goes back down to Jerusalem for the Feast of Tabernacles again. And this is probably now 32. And then in 32 also and into 33 is his ministry in Judea and Perea after his Galilean ministry. And he will be down in Jerusalem again for another feast, the Feast of Dedication. That is Hanukkah near the end of the year in 32. And that leads us up to 33 then. With Jesus' triumphal entry in the spring, and of course his crucifixion on April 2nd of that year, and then the other events that we've talked about today.
Next time we're going to be talking about the rest of the New Testament in terms of its chronology, the New Testament church, with less than a minute. What's in store for next Wednesday with you?
Well, we'll try to figure out, especially when Paul was in his ministry, but also we'll try to figure out some of the events of Peter's ministry that are very complicated, but we can figure them out from the book of Acts. And, of course, things that then will fall into place, the martyrdom of Stephen, we'll be able to figure out when that happened, and we'll be able to take Paul through his journeys and even kind of figure out when some of Paul's letters had to be written as the events in Acts coordinate with some of the things that Paul says in his letters.
Dr. Andrew Steinman is professor of theology and Hebrew at Concordia University, Chicago, author of the new book, From Abraham to Paul, A Biblical Chronology. I look forward to next week's conversation and the conclusion of our series on biblical chronology. Dr. Steinman, thank you.
Thank you, Todd.
It is kind of fascinating. I was thinking just a minute ago, I'm sure you could look it up online, how many times Good Friday falls on April 2, according to our calendar. That we can actually put a pin down, not only to the place, but to the time in history, the exact time in history, the day and the hour in history where God fulfilled his purpose, set forth before the world was created, set into motion with a promise to our first parents, even as they had fallen into sin, that he would send his son into the world to crush the serpent's head. And I don't know if God keeps a calendar. Maybe he does. If he does, it's far more sophisticated than anything we can sort out. But he had set the time. With that promise, even before the foundation of the world, with his eternal intention to redeem mankind through the shed blood of his son, Jesus Christ, he set the time. Kind of gives an interesting cast to things like what St. Paul says when he says, when the time had fully come. God had a day on a calendar. That day is still marked on God's calendar because it's the day when he finally did what he promised he would do in his son, and paid the price for the sins of all the world. It's a day that ought to be marked on all of our calendars, whether we count it as April 2 or not, because it is the day when we were brought out of our slavery to sin and set free by the blood of Jesus Christ. That day in history where he did it, he finished it for us. And he brings that day forward to us each and every day of our lives through his word and his ongoing presence among us through that word and his sacraments. A great day indeed. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you again tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois. 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.